Welcome to KDNK's weekly newsreel,
a news magazine that takes a look at the week's top local and regional news stories aired on KDNK between Monday and Friday. Subscribe to our podcast and give us a review on iTunes. If you have a tip on something you'd like the KDNK news team to cover, send it to news@kdnk.org. All submissions are confidential. The weekly newsreel is underwritten by RJ Paddywax Pet Outfitters, next to City Market in Elgebel. Open 7 days a week. More info at 970-963-1700 or rjpaddywax.com.
I'm Amy Haddon Marsh, your host. Memorial Day weekend got off to a hot start Thursday evening when a fire broke out near Harvey Gap. Firefighters quickly doused the one-acre blaze. On Friday afternoon, two fires ignited near Newcastle within 2 hours of each other. The first blaze began around 1:43 p.m. between I-70 and the Colorado River, east of Newcastle, between mile markers 105 and 106. Colorado River Fire and Rescue told KDNK Saturday that the 10 to 12-acre fire is contained. Crews also cut a wet line Friday around a tree where eagles are nesting. Crews monitored the nest in two-hour shifts throughout Friday evening. So far, so good with the eagle family. The fire burned mainly in oak brush and willows and, as per Colorado River Fire and Rescue, did not affect most of the cottonwoods in the area. No injuries were reported. Fire crews responded to the other Friday fire on County Road 335 south of I-70 around 20 minutes past 3. That fire has also been contained. Less than a half hour later, I-70 eastbound closed due to a fatal car accident near mile marker 107. KDNK will air more details on these stories as they emerge. Carbondale Town Manager Jay Harrington reports that the playgrounds and the skate park remain closed. Tennis courts and the bike park have reopened with restrictions. The Red Hill Road Realignment Project began Monday, and public showers are available at the Gateway RV Park bathrooms Wednesdays from noon to 2.
Glenwood Springs City Council has asked Councilmember Tony Hershey to step down, reports the Post-Independent. A letter presented at Thursday's meeting states that Hershey, an at-large member of the council, has contributed to a toxic and hostile environment on the council. It adds that incidents date back a year and peaked during a May 15th executive session. The letter also accuses Hershey of missing work sessions, watching football games during council meetings, insulting council and city staff, and not fulfilling his role as council liaison to various boards and commissions. Hershey said Thursday that he will not resign. Kroger, the parent company of City Market, announced a call for artists in December to create something for the entryway of Carbondale's new store. The Post-Independent reports that two artists have been chosen from a field of 15. Raina Katzenberger and Andrew Roberts Gray will collaborate on a mural to be finished this fall.
Hanging Lake Trail opens on June 1st under certain restrictions, including a maximum of 128 visitors per day. 8 hiking group slots will be spaced throughout the day with 16 hikers per group max. All hikers must follow the 6-foot social distancing guidelines and show a permit to access the trail. Reservations are open at visitglenwood.com/hanginglake. As part of the state's plan to expand testing in long-term care facilities, scientists from Colorado State University will conduct COVID-19 testing of workers and residents in up to 30 skilled nursing facilities in Colorado. According to a press release, each facility will receive 8 consecutive weeks of testing to provide an early warning system for public health officials and managers at long-term care facilities. And Colorado's Joint Budget Committee Tuesday suspended the homestead exemption, which saves seniors on property taxes. Colorado Politics reports that Republican State Senator Bob Rankin was one of 2 dissenting votes. The suspension will last for the next 3 years.
A team of 9 people from Doctors Without Borders have been assigned to the Navajo Nation in Kayenta in Gallup, New Mexico, reports the Arizona Republic. A small part of the team has been there since mid-April with a Pueblo tribe north of Albuquerque. The rest of the team arrived in late April and could stay until at least June. The team is providing technical guidance to help with infection prevention and control and to expand contact tracing. The Pitkin County Board of Health this week approved rules for restaurants to open their doors and able also to raise the group gathering size from 10 people to 50 people when the new public health order begins next Wednesday. But reports the Aspen Times it's pretty much dependent on what Governor Polis says on May 25th. If the state does not open restaurants or chooses another group gathering number, Pitkin County will need approval of a variance it submitted to the state on Monday. That variance has not yet been approved. Lodging will open at 50% capacity on May 27th.
The Snowmass Town Council Monday approved an ordinance allowing the town to begin efforts to purchase the Snowmass Inn and add it to the town's affordable housing inventory, reports the Aspen Times. The inn was built in 1967 and renovated in 1985. It has 39 studios with full bathrooms and kitchenettes and two full apartments.
KDNK's Kathleen Shannon spoke with Jay Harrington about town hall operations during the Safer at Home reopening phase.
Tell us what town hall looks like these days.
We have kept the lobby open to town hall, so there's access to both public restrooms. There's a phone in the lobby where folks can call and make payments. And there's also Wi-Fi there if someone needs to get on. There's a code up on the wall. So we've tried to keep things accessible for folks, but then not actually have folks within the working areas of town hall and keeping those employees separate. The rec center has been closed through this period. We're going to be evaluating whether that opens at the end of the month. And it all depends on size limitations and operational limitations. You know, we do provide PPE for our employees, and being a municipality, we were able to secure necessary masks, and employees have the option when they're out working with the public whether to use their own masks or town-provided masks, but those are available to all our employees. We've had a lot of other donations and people bringing by supplies and that type of thing. So we're in pretty good shape on the emergency service side of things.
What has changed at Town Hall in the Safer at Home phase?
In May, we reengaged our boards and commissions, you know, with virtual meetings. We're continuing to dial that in. There's times when folks haven't been able to get in and they wanted to. And so that's a learning process both for us and the public. One of the things we're going to have to do is look at what has really worked for us during this process and been efficient for our operations and what hasn't, and what we adapt to our regular operations, you know, long term as things continue to change with the pandemic. And the only thing we opened up recently was this week on Monday was the first time we had municipal court. And with that, there's a thermal scan, a mask requirement, and a number limitation where folks have to socially distance in the lobby or outside, and we only let one defendant with their family in the courtroom at a time.
Are there any plans in place for making changes to these policies in town hall in the foreseeable future, or are you just kind of taking it week by week?
We're really waiting to see with the gradual opening up if there's a spike in cases and what both the county health department and state health department do with the next health orders. It's been such a moving target. We don't have a here's our next plan. We've had some internal discussions of what that may look like. It does seem that in all our discussions with the state that small gathering sizes are going to be something which continues for a while. And one of those reasons is to be able to contact trace folks if they were in a gathering and they ended up being sick with COVID-19. Every week you think you have things figured out and it just changes. So we'll continue to have to be flexible as we adapt to this.
Carbondale trustees Tuesday voted 6-1 in favor of a limited face mask ordinance. KDNK's Lucas Turner has the story.
It's limited in scope and requires all persons when entering and while inside places of businesses at locations where the public contact is likely, with some clarifications of that, to wear a mask with a definition on it. And then there's a series of exemptions in there too.
That's Town Manager Jay Harrington with a brief overview of the ordinance just before the public meeting opens up for comments. Exceptions listed in the order include persons for whom a face covering would cause breathing impairment, those who work in places that are not open to the public, and children under the age of 2, among others.
Penalties for violating the order include a graduated fine schedule in municipal court for multiple offenses. But Town Manager Jay Harrington points out that enforcement of the ordinance is not likely to be significant.
I would expect warnings far more than citations on this. It's one of those ordinances which will be hard to enforce.
After some other basic clarifications about enforcement and exactly where the ordinance will apply, the virtual meeting opens up to comments from 14 members of the public. 10 speak in favor of the ordinance, 4 are against.
I want to be able to run the business with my employees and my staff being safe and just as safe as the customers that I am required by all of these other public safety health requirements to keep my business running.
The protection from the town is of the utmost importance for us to move forward comfortably and safely. And I believe that it just shows respect for our community and its members if we can all unite on this, because I am concerned for the safety of my staff.
Another business owner shares support for others wearing masks, but says he doesn't want to be required to do so himself, and that more restrictive public health orders could harm his business.
We're in that gentle open phase right now, which is about 5 to 10% of our normal business. And so obviously it's going to be very difficult for our company to stay open long term should various policies be in place that don't allow people to connect.
Trustee Heather Henry says that the perception of safety is a key factor for businesses to be able to reopen effectively.
We have overwhelmingly heard that it will help with the perception of safety. And to me, that is what helps us reopen the economy of this community.
Another public comment against the order cites the U.S. Constitution as an argument against mandating masks, but Town Attorney Mark Hamilton explains the order's legal basis.
The legal justification for the action would derive both from Carbondale being a home rule town that has authority to rule in areas of local concern. The additional justifications are the state statutes that we've cited in the ordinance draft. That provides for municipalities, home rule, or statutory to have authority to address public health issues.
Trustee Lonnie Kitching says the ordinance is not an inquisition on civil liberties, instead describing it as a courtesy.
I would hope that Carbondale, as a caring community, can be circumspect and do its part to put personal preferences aside temporarily out of consideration for those at greater risk.
Before a roll call vote, trustees Marty Silverstein, Erica Sparhawk, Luis Illanes, and Ben Baumfalk also speak in favor of the ordinance, but Mayor Dan Richardson says he's not convinced that a mandatory order will be beneficial.
By voting no, it doesn't mean I don't believe the science. It doesn't mean I don't support the businesses. It means that I think the best approach is different than this, and that's all I'm saying.
Following the comments, trustees passed the ordinance with a vote of 6-1, with the mayor casting the dissenting vote. The order is effective immediately for the town of Carbondale, which up to this point was the last municipality in the Roaring Fork Valley without some form of mandatory face covering order. It will remain in effect until the town manager declares the end to the state of emergency, the Board of Trustees repeals or amends it, or it is superseded by a valid health order from Garfield County or the state of Colorado. You can find the order at carbondalegov.org. KDNK News, I'm Lucas Turner.
According to county and state public health information, COVID-19 cases in Garfield County are at 121, up from 113 reported last week. No more deaths from the disease have been reported in the county. Pitkin County reports 57 cases and 2 deaths total. Eagle County reports 575 confirmed cases, up 7 from last week, and 8 deaths total. Mesa County reports 50 confirmed cases, and Rio Blanco County reports only 1 confirmed case.
You're listening to the Weekly News Reel, featuring top stories aired between Monday and Friday. In-kind support comes from Grassroots Community Network, promoting civic participation through civil discourse, creative endeavors, and cultural interaction. Grassroots TV also partners with KDNK to air live Pitkin County public health and community meetings. More info at grassrootstv.org.
At 5 p.m. Friday, Garfield County Public Health suspended Shooter's Grill retail establishment license. In a press release issued over the weekend, Garfield County Emergency Management stated that a restaurant open for on-premises consumption currently creates a, quote, imminent health hazard as defined by Colorado's Food Protection Act, end quote. The press release also said that the license suspension is independent of the public health order violation facing the restaurant. Boebert was served with a cease and desist order last Tuesday for serving customers inside the restaurant against state and county orders. She continued serving customers inside and was hit with a temporary restraining order on Wednesday. Then she moved seating outside, setting up tables in a roped-off area in the street. That's when her license was suspended. On Friday afternoon, Boebert posted a video on the restaurant's Facebook page with her side of the story.
I said I was taking this day by day, and here we are on Friday. Shortly after 5 p.m., Garfield County Public Health stopped by and suspended my food license. So we are not serving food until I meet with them on Monday morning at 9 a.m. I have a hearing scheduled, and I will keep you all updated. Thank you all so much for your support, and I will talk to you soon. God bless you.
Boebert is scheduled to appear in district court at the Garfield County Courthouse in Glenwood Springs for a preliminary injunction hearing at 9 a.m. today. Shooter's Grill could remain closed even after other Garfield County restaurants are allowed to open. The restaurant is no longer able to provide curbside pickup or takeout services. Edwin Wilkes, owner of the Tradesman Gun Store, a neighbor of Shooter's, started a GoFundMe page for the restaurant on Saturday. Lauren Boebert's case has been continued to May 26th. Glenwood's Saturday Farmers Market celebrates 35 years this summer. For founder Ken Coons, co-owner and operator of Peach Valley CSA, the advantages of an alternative distribution method are affirmed this season by the pandemic. KDNK's Raleigh Burley caught up with Coons to learn more.
Things are pretty normal here on the farm, and the spring seems pretty normal. Water's running well, and neighbor has the calves in the field, and you know, so it seems pretty normal, and it's something that really, I think, helps me in a lot of ways to see that nature goes on in spite of the other things that happen around us.
For 35 years now, Ken and Gail Coons have made locally grown produce available through a Saturday market in Glenwood Springs and by selling CSA shares.
We actually started our farmers market in Glenwood Springs back in 1985, so this would be a 35-year anniversary of that.
Although the market is slated to begin in late June every Saturday at 14th and Grand in Glenwood Springs, founding vendor Peach Valley CSA Farm may not be joining until later in the season.
We are probably going to do something a little different, maybe be there just a bit later into July and August. It has been a challenging year, to say the least, in terms of making decisions.
Ken is seeing advantages of the CSA model affirmed by the pandemic crisis.
Where things have been going is sort of in line with where we've been on the CSA side for a lot of years.
Peach Valley CSA Farm was among the first in Colorado to implement the CSA model. CSA denotes community-supported agriculture and refers to a subscription-based cost-sharing model for farms to spread their yields among members.
It's really a help to have something that can be delivered to a family and without too many touches in between, and oftentimes just a day or two between when it was harvested and on someone's table.
This model also provides farmers with early season income when costs are high and plants are far from producing. Risk is lessened by a guaranteed destination for produce, and a deeper relationship is made possible with the buyer.
We allow people to come out and help or include them in some of the processes of the farm, children also, but that's usually members, and it's part of the joys of membership and being involved in a local farm.
Ken hopes to see the recent boost in support for local agriculture continue far beyond this pandemic.
Hopefully these are things that that will cause us to look more at what we can do differently, not just in the health care and the preventive part of disease, but, you know, what are these other things, good local food, fresh foods, and things that would really help local communities.
For KDNK News, I'm Raleigh Burley.
Take care. Have a good day. Stay well.
A coalition of 135 Colorado organizations is urging state lawmakers to use all tools in their toolbox to blunt the most serious economic impacts of the coronavirus pandemic. Lost revenues are projected to create a $3.3 billion budget shortfall, the largest in state history. Adam Fox with the Colorado Consumer Health Initiative says the anticipated cuts would be far greater than any made during the Great Recession.
What that means is that there will be huge cuts to education, to healthcare services, to services for older adults, to everything that our state government pitches in for.
The coalition, which includes groups serving the state's most vulnerable communities, is calling for federal relief, tapping the state's emergency fund, and temporarily raising taxes on Coloradans earning more than $250,000 a year. Fox notes that 95% of workers would see their tax bill go down under the proposal. Colorado's Taxpayer Bill of Rights, or TABOR, limits the ways lawmakers can increase revenues, but Fox notes tax modifications can be made during a public health emergency. Fox says if there was ever a time to use the emergency tax provisions under the state's constitution, it is now.
To help the state deal with the COVID-19 virus, number one, but also ensure that we are as best positioned as possible to recover.
Since COVID-19 sent the economy into a medically induced coma, 420,000 Coloradans have filed for unemployment, and sales taxes and other revenue sources have all but dried up. The coalition is calling for the state's Joint Budget Committee to advance the proposal. The measure would then need to be approved by two-thirds of the Colorado General Assembly.
This is Eric Galatis reporting for KDNK.
Garfield County libraries have been open with restrictions for 2 weeks. I went to the Carbondale Library to check out the situation and a book with branch manager Lacey Dunleavy.
Put my movie in the backdrop.
I had 3 movies to return to the Carbondale Library, some of which I had watched 4 times during the district's 2-month COVID closure.
So there's always someone sitting in the entryway just to kind of just ask people, you know, make sure everybody knows what they can do and where to go.
The libraries are open now, but with restrictions. The first of which is that if you have items to return, go to the outside book drop first. Then you can enter the building, provided you're wearing a face covering.
So when we walk here, there's some tape, and we can only walk to the front desk. It's all blocked by empty shelving and chairs. And I didn't recognize the front desk with the glass up.
I also had a movie and a book to pick up. Lacey Dunleavy, Carbondale Library branch manager, helped me out from behind a glass partition.
Okay, I'm going to walk over and get your hold. I'll be right back.
Okay.
Dunleavy said the glass partitions at the front desk were specially built by a library employee.
It was really important that we get these sneeze guards or whatever you want to call them. They've been really helpful at City Market. And, you know, this is what I love so much about Carbondale is that everyone's so comfortable in the library. And so we have people, you know, hey, come back around the desk and look at this. And, you know, it's like, it's funny, but we can't really do that right now. So
the library also took advantage of the closure with a deep cleaning.
That was really great that during this shutdown, we actually were able to do, you know, obviously the standard cleaning that we all needed to do. We got our carpets cleaned. We were able to, we're working with some furniture. We repainted our chalkboard, so still got a lot of stuff done.
All Garfield County libraries, from Carbondale to Parachute, opened with restrictions on Monday, May 11th. Dunleavy says it's been good, but there have been a few challenges, including wearing a mask at work.
The library is designed so people can walk around and see what we have, and it's meant to be like a sensory experience, you know, especially for kids and children. And so this is just like an entirely different way to use the library. I think that, you know, the scheduling has been a challenge. But again, I think it's just all of us making it work. And if that's what we have to do to make sure that we can be safe for the public, then that's what we're doing.
She adds the closure did not affect the Carbondale Library's efforts to hire new staff or to bring in more materials, as per ballot issue 6A, which voters approved last year and which added funding to the district.
I'm fully staffed now. We've officially doubled our staff. We're still ordering lots of new books. We're still moving forward with lots of different projects and initiatives.
The public rooms remain closed, and events are still on hold due to public health orders prohibiting large gatherings. But Dunleavy says the library has fit in a lot of the same programs.
Like, our summer reading programming is still going to happen. We're just going to be doing a lot of things on Zoom and on Facebook. I think in some ways it's actually encouraged more people to participate. There's been less pressure to show up at a specific time, or, you know, let's say you show up and it's like, well, this isn't quite what I thought. You don't have to sneak around the back of the room or whatever. You can just close a window on your computer and you're out of the event, you know?
So it's the same library with all the great materials and staff. But instead of perusing the stacks, patrons can go online and request an item or have a one-on-one with a librarian for ideas about movies and books.
We can still use the same stuff. It's just like everything else these days. It's just a little bit different.
And finally, Amanda Peacher of the Mountain West News Bureau talked to some youngsters about what's on their minds during the pandemic.
I usually am more of a worried person. Like, I get worried about a lot of stuff, but this time it's definitely more. But now it's like there's a lot more bigger, badder things going on.
I feel stressed because I feel like I'm putting a lot of pressure on my parents, asking them questions in the middle of like conference calls and stuff. And it feels like I'm putting stress on them. And I'll get like really sad, and then I don't know what to do with it, and then I'll like yap at them, and then I'll feel bad about that, and I'll get sad again, and it just goes around and around and around.
So I guess I'm kind of worried, like, if my dad gets the virus, because my dad has multiple sclerosis, so if he gets the virus, it would be much more effective on him than it would on us, and there's more of a chance he would be dying.
Yeah, and it's been, like, hard to sleep, and because I'm thinking, and I can't quite, like, turn my brain off, I guess. I like having a schedule and knowing what's happening. Like, a month ago, I thought we were going to have 2 weeks out of school, and now it's to the end of, to the summer, so it's kind of hard, yeah.
I'm a very, like, big extrovert, and so it's really hard for me to not see all my friends. And it's hard because it's the last year of elementary school. And so I'm missing out on graduation, and I was doing safety patrol, and now I don't get to go to Wahoos or the rocket launch.
It's a little weird trying to stay home when, like, I would prefer to play with all my friends or be running around the neighborhood like a wild cat, playing in mud and getting dirty, playing with my friends.
It's sad to have corona, because then we can't see our teachers and our friends.
I'm afraid it might come to me and get me and probably kill me, because I don't want to die. And it's scary to die, because you don't know what it's going to feel like.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm also worried that, like, people could loosen the law a little bit and let us hang out more, and then it'll just get big again because we're hanging out.
It's okay to have this big change in my life. It's fine, because then I get to be with my family.
You heard from 6-year-old Emerson, 10-year-old Eleanor, 11-year-old Wren, 11-year-old Brennan, and 10-year-old Olivia. That does it for this week's newsreel on KDNK. All of our stories and more are at kdnk.org. The Weekly Newsreel is a news magazine that takes a look at the week's top local and regional news stories aired on KDNK between Monday and Friday. Subscribe to our podcast and give us a review on iTunes. If you have a tip on something you'd like the KDNK news team to cover, send it to news@kdnk.org. All submissions are confidential. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.